You're listening to The Unpenned Show with Paul and Andy, broadcasting live around the world. We believe freedom is free. It is enslavement that you're paying for. If you ain't mad by now, you're not paying attention.
So here we go again, and it is Tuesday the 7th of May 2013, just after 9 p.m. on live on Block Talk Radio. Hello, mate.
Good evening, Paul.
Okay, my name's Paul. I'm sat in with Andy, and tonight we have a guest. I'll tell you a little bit about a guest in a minute, but 7 days have gone by, a bank holiday weekend, and they've opened, at least they've reopened.
Yes.
At least they've reopened. I mean, in Cyprus, they didn't open again, did they?
They didn't, no.
They told them that on a Friday afternoon, they never opened again for a couple of weeks. So, the great downhill ride, isn't it? Because I think that's what we're doing, isn't it? Mm. This is the roller coaster, and this is the descent, isn't it?
It is. We're on the descent.
And we scream on the way down, don't we?
We've got our arms in the air.
Yeah, exactly. The faster we go, the louder we scream.
Yeah. Yep.
And it is actually, in an upside-down world way, the most exciting bit of the ride, isn't it?
Yep.
The most boring bit is the long climb up the hill, isn't
trudge
it?
Trudge up the hill, yeah.
It's a bit like sledging, isn't it?
The slow trudge up the hill.
Yeah. And isn't that just what we're on now?
Yeah.
Isn't this roller coaster going into its descent at breakneck speed?
We are hurtling down that hill, yeah.
And we're loving it, aren't we?
We're loving it every minute.
I mean, I will not be deterred from saying what I want to say. I think too many people are actually loving this.
Mm.
I think people are saying, told you. And I'm just going to disappear for a week or two, and I'm going to find out what bad news is coming next. Then I'll tell you. And told you. I mean, is this actually a war that we're in?
It is a war, yeah.
It's always been a war, hasn't
Hello
it?
Hello is war.
It's always been a war.
Mm-hmm.
Hell and Bell is war.
Cheers.
Yeah, and we're in a two-war.
Mm-hmm.
By Bell,
yes.
Exactly. It's a two-war or a two-level fable.
Yep.
We've done this before. The decode isn't that one or the other is correct.
No.
They're both correct.
They are.
We don't understand the complexity of how this works and the simplicity of how it looks to us. Now we've figured out that there isn't just one meaning.
No.
The words are multi-use. What they are. They are. Multi-use words.
Mm, they're multicultural as well.
And they're used by different levels for different reasons.
Mm.
This is an age, and we're in a mess, and everybody's got a message, and they've all got a message to spread.
That's right.
And I've heard a new word, shilosophy. Shilosophy.
Yes, you said that the other day. I like that one, shilosophy.
Shilosophy. It's going to stay with me, is that one. I do like that one. We're the advance party, aren't we?
Yes.
We've got no weapons to defend ourselves.
No.
No guns, no knives, no baseball bats, nothing. But we're still the advance party with no means of defending ourselves. Yeah?
Yeah.
And we keep going and sitting right at the front of the theatre of war. We go sitting right at the front. We take in the show of the day.
Mm-hmm.
We probably take in the morning performance, the afternoon performance. And for those that are addicted, you'll go to the night time as well. You'll go to the show three times in a day to decode what's coming next. Because our creators of reality are busy creating it.
Mm.
But they actually prescribe it.
They do.
And we describe it. So we bring it into the realms of reality because we tell all our friends, how bad it's going to be tomorrow.
Mm.
And we like being right, don't we?
We do, yeah.
And when it works once, you think, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to tell them what's going to happen next week.
Yeah, you put it all
and
on your tablet.
And then I'm going to tell them what's on your tablet, yeah? Take your bloody tablet.
Take your tablet every day, yeah.
But that's sort of how we're getting on with this nutcase, isn't it?
Mm.
The reason why I started like that is because this is the tone of tonight's show. And the reason that we have our guest is because this guest made a comment, and I thought, somebody else gets it like we get it. So, let's introduce him then, shall we? Let me find out my little... Here we are. We press this button here. And we have on the show this evening, the gentleman's name is Mr. Clint Richardson. He's produced films The Corporation Nation, The Great Pension Fund Hoax, and Lethal Injection. The Story of Vaccination. They're three main movies you can find at thecorporationnation.com. He's an avid blogger, realityblogger.wordpress.com, that blogger with just one G in, remember. All the way from America. A very good afternoon to Mr. Clint Richardson. Hello, sir.
How you doing, Paul?
I'm very, very good. Thank you for joining us in the UK this evening. It is just after 9 p.m. UK time. And basically, I just did the intro there, and I was hoping you'd let me get through it, and you did. Thank you for doing so. The reason that you caught my attention is because you put a post up, and I read it, and then I got to your blogger site, and then I went through some of that, and I thought, oh, I like the sound of this gentleman. I do like him. Because you've got to the point that we've got to, and I have in sat with me this evening, my pal Andy.
Good evening, Clint.
How you doing, Andy?
Yeah, very well.
Yeah, you've got to the point that we've got to, which is this internet thing is not the spy who loves me, but it pretends to be the spy who loves me. And we have to use it like, I would say, a ball of fire. It can be a welcome addition, or it can be a dangerous servant.
Well, you try to explain to people that the internet isn't real. It's sort of the artificial construct, or the matrix, if you will, that's been built up. And see, the problem is that it's really hard to explain, but people actually feel like they're doing something. And I think that's the whole purpose of this whole social media thing, is that people feel like they're participating in something when actually they're not. You know, government isn't monitoring everything that you do on the internet. It doesn't care that you say you don't like what government is doing, or you don't like that you're being touched inappropriately. Government doesn't care what you have to say in a conversational forum or format like the internet. So all these forums and all of these things, they're great for getting preventing, but that's all they are. In order to do anything, you're going to have to step outside of this comfort zone that we call the internet, this digital realm, and you're actually going to have to put yourself out there. You're going to have to take some dangerous steps, like I just did. I got felt up by the TSA, and now I'm going to sue the heck out of them because I didn't consent to any of their actions. So, you know, you actually have to do something physical. And by that, I mean you have to step out of the artificial realm of the internet, and you actually have to enter the legal realm, which is still artificial, but it's the realm where government actually is. So talking conversationally, talking out of Webster's Dictionary ain't going to do a thing for you. Until you talk the language of government, they hear Chinese. They're not required to do a thing for you as long as you are acting as basically an idiot on the internet. I mean, I hate to say that. I don't mean to be crash or rude, but it's one of those realizations that you have to realize that the social media aspect is specifically designed to take all of your actions, all of your efforts, and force them into a area that absolutely has no effect on reality. And that, I think, is, I'm assuming, is what you're talking about when we say this, because it really is. It's a very frightening concept when you think that the entire nation of America, the entire nation of England and Canada, all of our efforts are literally being, you know, forced into this artificial realm of social media, and we unfortunately are not making a dent in anything. In fact, things are getting worse because of it, because we're not putting ourselves out there in the real world.
I call it Neverland. Now, the internet to me is Neverland, and that is that the plan is that we never leave. We fall in love with it because it answers all our questions and gives us everything we need on demand. No longer do we have to sit in front of the television and be programmed. We happily go and do it ourselves. And the simulation, this is a simulation of reality, and we like it because we don't really have to do anything. And with this second life, this second, I call it a zombie-type existence, because this is what I would say, the animation of the persona, the alter ego. You can be whatever you want on this, and this allows you to see that ego and act as if it's real, that persona, that personality. It puts life into it. You're sat here talking to a dead thing that can't speak, which means it's corpse and it's mute. Well, put corpse and mute together and you get computers. So we bring life to it with our persona. And it's, for me, it's the dance of the zombies.
Yeah, I always tell people, I always forewarn people that I'm writing a book, actually. It's my first venture into actually putting something down on paper as opposed to this digital realm. And basically it's about the straw man, or what we all call the straw man, the artificial person, all the contracts and everything else. And I'm going to go very deeply into that, what is the name and all that. Well, one of the aspects of that is to break down this movie that everybody talks about, but no one ever really figured out. And I believe that I've finally gotten to the point where I actually understand what The Matrix is, because I went frame by frame through this movie and looked at all the props and looked at everything that was, and there are so many things in that movie that people just don't see or don't have the current knowledge to see.
But it turns out
that movie is primarily based on a prop that was in the movie, which was a box that the main character put money into in his apartment. And on that box, it was a hollowed-out book called Simulation and Simulacrum. And, boy, if anybody wants to figure out what that movie was really, really talking about, besides the fact of going, you know, being a real man instead of this artificial person, go and take a look at that. It's online. You know, you can get excerpts from it online. It's called Simulacrum and Simulation, or vice versa. And basically the premise of the book, and it's so important to understand this because this really boils back down to the internet and the social media, is that everything that is real has been put aside and a symbol of some sort has taken its place. A simulation of the real basically has taken its place. So we if you're religious, you don't go to Jesus, you go to your preacher. A preacher is the symbol of your religion, whatever that is. Doesn't have to be Jesus. If it's, you know, everything is now a symbol of what is real. So we are worshiping these idols, these symbols, these, you know, whatever you want to call them. It is a simulation of reality in this whole, you know, media, and yet we don't recognize what is real. So, I mean, I highly recommend people. It's a very difficult read, but boy, if you get what's in that book and you get what this guy is saying with the whole simulation of reality, boy, you know, everything starts to make a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, I'm delighted we've got no messing about, no niceties, no intros, just straight into it. This is what I love, really. The problem with YouTube is the attention span is so short that if you don't get into these interviews and grab them by the start, like all good movies, we have to make the movie real. You see, movie reel. I mean, the Hollywood connections, we're going to go into those when that comes into the conversation, but I know you can connect all that together frame by frame, because we are being framed. We are being set up. This is a simulation that we live in. And the theatre of dreams is the theatre in your head. And it works exactly like the theatre on the outside. With the sun shining through the reality that we see, it goes into the lens, which is your eyes, and the picture is flipped and played at the back of your head. And that's the movie theatre that they're actually basically hijacking, counterfeiting, stealing from us, and putting their own movies in there. And that's exactly how I see reality, or a version of it.
Yeah, and even as we speak, history is being rewritten in Hollywood with all these movies that are coming out. I mean, you really have a generation that's growing up believing the history that they're being shown in a fictional setting. And it's very frightening when you start actually learning true history, looking at sources that aren't taught in your government-sponsored schools. Yeah, it becomes a whole new playing field, a whole new world. You know, we were talking off air, the Boston bombing that happened, and by the way, to your listeners, I apologize for my horrible American accent. But I pulled up the, after that Boston bombing, for some reason I'd read the report from Iron Mountain, you know, like 10 years ago.
Yeah, read
and
it.
Didn't really have much meaning to me then, but for some reason that stuck with my head, and I realized that this Boston bombing, you know, there's absolutely no reason for someone to set off some random kid, or even, you know, even a terrorist group, if there is such a thing, to set off a bomb and kill a bunch of innocent people for absolutely no reason. The only person, and by person I mean corporation, by corporation I mean government, the only corporation that has anything to profit from that is the continuity of government, is the portrayal of fear to keep the people loyal to the government who will protect them from that thing that is causing them fear and terrorism. And I realized, boy, if you really go through that report from Iron Mountain, which everybody should be doing, mm-hmm. and you can apply this to any state of the world, any country, any government, I should say, because it's all about the continuity of government and not allowing, you know, not allowing peace to destroy government, because peace is the worst thing that can happen to a government when you're talking about the support of this whole, you know, what do they call it, the weapons corporations, military-industrial complex, the thing that will protect us. You realize that everything that's happening was a well-orchestrated, very well-planned, pre-planned bunch of events that is specifically designed to not only keep us in fear, but then a few years later, you're going to see a movie about that. And whether it be the climate or aliens or terrorists or some other intangible thing. How about internet security? The horrible hackers that are going to get into your computer. Every hacker I've met is more interested in getting into government and messing with them. But a year or two later, you're going to see a movie on the Boston bombing, and it's going to rewrite history. You're going to continue to see movies made of presidents, making Ronald Reagan somehow a hero, making George Bush somehow a hero, making, how about Margaret Thatcher, somehow a hero. It's just we are living in history that is literally being rewritten as it occurs, and that's a really bizarre concept.
It certainly is, actually. The Boston bombing is something that interests me in only the way that reality, we know we live in a duality, and this duality, in computer speak, we've been taken to a singularity. But nothing stands alone in this complex level system that we're in. And when they talk about a singularity, it's one of everything. And we're going to get down to one of everything over a period of time. And what I'm going to is the Boston bombings. What makes the most sense to me and what I see clearly is that if they have used actors in the past to perform these false flags, as people call them, these actors are going to become more so and more so and more so until what we're actually seeing has been prescribed, every single part of it. Now, I can't say if 9/11 was that. I don't think it was. I think 9/11 was just allowed to happen. We've got 7/7 in the UK here, and the atrocities that happened on 7/7 were identical to a drill that was being performed at the very same time, with the very same stations, the very same story. Was the drill was running at exactly the same time as the 7/7 bombings actually happened. And you start to think, yes, they can't take chances in anything here. It must all be prescribed by them, described by their controlled news media, and subscribed to us by us.
Well, I think you also have to stop and consider something that I never had considered myself, but you kind of have to realize that they're also going to make mistakes. They're also going to leave loose ends, and they're going to make it possible and even promote themselves the so-called conspiracy theory that's around this. So they're not going to pull off a perfect operation, because you have to have, in any society that is has a functional government, whether it be in war or peace, you have to have that duality like you're talking about, which is one set of people against another. One people calling the masses the sheep, and the masses calling those people the conspiracy theorists. And you always have to have that duality, the right and the left, the up and the down, the center and the whatever.
I absolutely agree.
And so you got to realize that these guys are purposefully, in my opinion, of course, are purposefully leaving these loopholes open.
Yep.
For other people to say, oh, well, look, wait, there's a loophole. There's an open end. Let's follow it.
Yep.
And, of course, it leads to something that was planned for someone to find. And it's and we all go on the Internet and we say, look, it's obvious this thing was a planned thing. And yet none of us have gone into the court to say that. Yep. None of us has filed a proper legal document naming names. None of us has followed the chain of evidence that is required for such a court game. I mean, none of us do the right thing is the point, because we're all stuck, again, in our avatar, in our, as you say, this dualistic thing where we think we're participating in something, but really we're not. Every complaint that we send as an email to our government goes right into the digital trash. It takes up no space whatsoever. government loves the fact that you're going to complain to it online because it's digital. They don't have to file it away in some, you know, paper or copy it into the computer. It's just a one-button click, sends you a form letter that says we received your inquiry and we'll get back to you possibly sometime in the future, and they're done with you.
The problem, we're a little bit stifled in that. I mean, we can try, but here, the justice system, the criminal's justice system here, which is designed just to protect the criminals, as I'm sure you're aware, we don't have any solicitors, barristers, or lawyers that are prepared to take this to the courts and fight. I mean, we've had a few speak out, and I've contacted a number and none of them have come back to me. They're not prepared to go any further than just writing a little bit that appears in one of our dailies. They'll write a little bit and say, this is wrong, this is this, that, but most of them have retired as well by then.
Right, yeah.
You know, and who can we get to help us with the fight? Because we don't have the legal expertise, but we have the will and desire.
Mm. Well, now you're falling for...
No.
I mean, even the most educated, the most open-hearted, open-minded person can fall for it. Because you're saying that there has to be some hero that's going to come and save us. Who can we turn to? Who is the person? All the time, the person is you. You have to be able. You have to be willing to put your foot out there and put yourself in the line of danger.
Clint, let me stop you.
Why would you go to a government, a bar or a barista or any of those offices that are government offices to complain about government? It doesn't make any sense.
No. Hang on a second. I knew you were going to go there, and I wanted to finish that point. And I was going to say, why do you think those solicitors and barristers and lawyers speak out? Why do you think they do a little bit and then go back into the shadows again?
Because they're paid to.
I realise that. That's the point that I was making, is why can't we find these people to make this fight easier? Because they have the experience that we don't. I was getting to the point of saying, because they are owned by the system, we believe they're there to help us. It's nothing of the sort.
No.
They are there to protect the criminals. And when we learned that, it's no good running to these people. We have to do it ourselves. So I was getting there. I promise.
I believe you. I know you. I know you well enough to know that you're no fool.
Yeah, I was getting there.
But, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, go to any movie, and there's always... You got Batman, you got Iron Man, you got... whatever man, it's always a hero that's going to... The Avengers are going to come and save the planet. Well, wait. And, of course, it's government that's hiring the Avengers to save... Superman now, we're going to have another. Spider-Man.
Yep.
Thank God we have all these fictional heroes to make us feel that if a problem ever occurred, we'd have a superhero to save us. Well, there's no such thing. The only hero and the only advocate, for that matter, of you and your rights is you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the primary points in my little journey here over the last 10 or so years that really woke me up to a point where now I can see from the top of the mountaintop, I can look down and I can see where all the mistakes are made. And that was the realization, again, that there is no power of the people.
No.
Because when the people have given over their sovereignty, their individual sovereignty, and I hate that word because really sovereignty shouldn't even be used, I don't think. But when you join the body politic, when you become a citizen, when you give up your natural state as a man and become this artificial construct, contracted under government, you sign what's called a unilateral agreement, which is a contract, but only signed by you, which is a very important aspect to this, because if there's no other signer to that contract, you're the only one that can change that contract. Mm-hmm. So I could literally go in and change the entire vehicle code as it applies to me, because I'm the only one that signed the contract.
Yep. Technically, it's not
as a
contract,
unilateral signer. So there's this – the realization – that all of the power of the people lies without the group. In other words, all the power lies within yourself. What government does is it tricks the people into giving it their consent to operate as a group. In other words, we enter into groupthink and we are tricked into this presumed consent, this manufactured consent that says anything you want to do, government, is just fine. And we go and, we complain on the internet, we complain in social media, but that does absolutely nothing. We're not actually going and saying, like, as an individual, for instance, I can demand that government cease and desist, let's say, geoengineering. As an individual, I withdraw my consent for you to conduct any geoengineering, to conduct any checkpoints or military anything, whatever, around me, around this 100-mile area here. As an individual, I do not offer you my consent. But as a group, that consent is inferred. That consent is already there. They don't need it. I mean, they basically put a public notice in the newspaper, and that is informed consent. Nobody reads public notices, of course. So the power of the people is not in the body politic. The power is in the individual. And once I realized that, then a whole new world opened, because now, I mean, I'm in the process of getting rid of my citizenship. I'm going to become a national, which is not really even a legal term in the way that I'm going to use it. There's like 12 different forms of quote-unquote citizenship in America. I'm going to get rid of my driver's license. I'm going to get rid of my voter registration. I'm going to get rid of all of that stuff and not have anything to do with government, because it turns out that everything is based on that Social Security number. And I'm going to withdraw that puppy. I'm going to withdraw the original application is what I'm going to do. So that thing never even existed as far as I'm concerned. And therefore, my driver's license doesn't exist. And therefore, this doesn't exist. I don't exist anymore as an artificial person. And that's really, if anything is ever going to change, people have to become, in the United States, I'm using the United States, of course, as an example, we have to become the people of the state, not of the central government that puts its corporate power over everything through contract. We actually have to withdraw from that central government. That's the only way anything's going to change, because all of the power of the central government relies strictly on everybody in America being a resident of Washington, D.C., and not of their state that they live in. And that can be applied, of course, transcontinental to basically any government. Withdraw. Why are you contractually obligated to the Queen or to the Prime Minister? Who says, other than him, that he has power over you? That's the – I mean, that's where it – that's – I don't know if I'm putting that in proper context, but the power of the individual is the only power, the only other option – is for you to be part of a sovereign nation, which means that you have no power or rights other than the political rights assigned to you by that sovereign. So, I'm ranting.
Well, the passion is great to hear. I mean, you've embarked on a journey, some journey that many people won't choose to take. And I venture to ask you that should you be successful in managing to shake off these shackles, as it were, the Social Security number and the restrictions that are placed on you by the driving license and other registration documents that you may or may not have, where will you be at that time? I mean, should you manage to escape the clutches of the rules and regulations system, where will you be at there personally? I mean, you know, will you be restricted on you know, driving and that sort of thing, or do you still intend to drive?
Well, I mean, I'll certainly continue to drive my truck, and I'll simply put a plate on the back of my truck that says farm use, non-commercial use. I mean, and see the real basis of that is the driver's license, and of course, the driver's license is solely based on the Social Security number. That's your number. Uh-huh. The number of the beast, I call it, because Social Security is now in over 130 countries across the world. It's no longer, and never was really, just a United States thing or a Britain thing. It's run by the World Bank, for God's sake. It's run in the United Nations under the IMF. That is what Social Security is. United States has like 13, 14 different countries it contracts with under Social Security to ensure each pension fund, which is what Social Security is, gets paid. Now, what that does to the citizen here, I don't know how this applies to other countries, but I would assume it's very similar. You've entered into you've basically entered into a contractual obligation because you're part of a pension system. You're part of something that will eventually pay you a dividend.
Yep.
And for that reason, the IRS, which is a – I mean, part of this is, if you boil it down, the IRS is a private corporation that is located and incorporated in Guam, which is not even in the United States. It's an insular possession, as they call it. And – so is the bar, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And so when you talk about the Internal Revenue Service, for instance, are we talking about the actual Internal Revenue Service, or are we talking about the revenue service that is actually located in Guam? Because that's the one that they come after you with. And, I mean, it's really simple to send them a letter and stating, look, you're a third party incorporated in Guam, and I am simply not a taxpayer, because if I don't have a Social Security number, I cannot be a taxpayer unless I'm an employee of government, and likely an employee of government has to have a Social Security number. So the whole thing is based on that number. Now I go to DMV and they say, well, look, I don't have a Social Security number, so any contract I have with you or any unilateral agreement I've signed that says I agree to follow your rules is absolutely invalid. I don't care when it was signed. I don't care, you know, I'm the only signer to that contract. Therefore, I'm the only signatory, which means I'm the only one that can change or alter that contract. Let's go to a bank. I've signed a unilateral agreement, a title, that says I'm going to follow the amortization schedule of my loan. Well, guess what? I'm the only one that signed that agreement. The agreement has nothing to do with the actual home. All I've done is entered into a ridiculous contract that says I'm going to pay the bank principal and interest, which is all profit because the bank never loans you any of its own money.
Yeah, that is.
I'm the only signatory of that title. Therefore, I'm the only person who can change. So let's go back to the Matrix, okay? What is the secret? How do you change the Matrix? How do you manipulate it to your will? How do you escape the agents of the Matrix? It's really simple. You withdraw or you alter the contract that you've signed, because it's not a bilateral contract. It's simply you signing a bunch of rules that some government agency has made up. You notice that government doesn't sign these contracts because government isn't a real person.
Well,
it's artificial. It does not have a signature.
You keep using the word contract.
You are signing an agreement that says you're going to follow the DMV or the motor vehicle code or whatever it's called over there. You're going to follow the Social Security card. You're going to be a good taxpayer. I mean, all of these things are nothing but agreements. They are not in any way a binding contract between two people. But they're, at the same time, If you don't follow the rules of that agreement, you've basically signed your name on there stating that you can be punished. You can be put in pain for disobeying what you agreed to. So how do you alter the Matrix? It's simple. You're the only signatory. You're the one. I'll put it to you this way. Now, I'm a big fan of Larkin Rose. I'm a big fan of anybody who promotes what's called the voluntary society. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, we should not be coerced. We should only have natural rights. If we choose to have political rights, great, you can contract. But really, no political right should ever harm the natural right. And if we don't know the difference between those two, that's paramount to understand. But, you know, they talk about, and I highly respect it, a voluntary society. In other words, we enter into private contracts. Government has nothing to do with it. What we haven't realized is that this whole time – we have all been in a voluntary society. We sign agreements, or in this case we call them, again, unilateral contracts, uni meaning one, lateral meaning you're handing over your powers, your rights, and a contract meaning you're bound by what's in that agreement. So a unilateral contract, and you're volunteering to do that. Now, in the case of a Social Security, there's no way that you could have signed that contract because it happened when you were born. So all you're doing is withdrawing the presumption of the original application, and that thing never exists. It's not attached to you anymore. Again, I'm not that familiar with the system in the UK there, but I'm assuming that everything is basically the same where, you know, everybody's just agreeing voluntarily to be under this whole tyrannical system.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, we didn't abolish slavery. We abolished involuntary slavery. That's what was abolished in this country in 1833. And basically, you're absolutely right. We have a national insurance number, which is exactly the same as your social security number. And that national insurance number did entitle us to health care and pension rights. But slowly but surely, the health care is being removed out of the national insurance part. Our health care is now going to an insurance-based system, pretty much like you have in America. And the national insurance now will just be put towards a pension fund that has been stolen a long time ago that doesn't exist. It's just a Ponzi scheme supporting itself. Last year in the UK, we had a second pension fund start by the government.
We did, yeah.
Because the first one's collapsed. It's gone. The 65-year life that it purports to pay out afterwards, well, it's now run for 65 years and now has to pay out more than it's getting in. So they started the second scheme October last year. So it's the same but different, but it's all theft.
Well, I mean, you have to consider, when you say it's theft, again, remember, it's theft, but it's consented to. It's voluntary. We agree to allow these people to steal from us. I'm gonna look up one of our codes in America, and it says, I mean, to a T, it tells you that you are a slave. But when you're talking about this again, it's voluntary. It's when you're talking about theft, what you're really saying is that your government is the ultimate form of organized crime, because, you know, there is no law if the law is lawless. In other words, in America, which I'm sure it's the same there, basically every law that's created here is then followed by an exemption from that law by government or by government contracted corporations. So a war corporation, a vaccine corporation that's completely private and yet invested in by government, that's a whole other can of worms, government being the main investor in all corporations across the world through these pension funds. But in other words, the main owner, when you collectively put all governments in as the stockholder, I mean, that brings a whole new light to things and why the government, you know, protects corporations and not people, because it's all for profit, imagined as a nonprofit. And so the voluntary aspect of this is that we are consenting to government creating law and then exempting themselves from the law. So everything that happens is – it may not be lawful, but we agree that it is legal. We agree that government is exempt from the laws that might otherwise put us in jail for fraud. We agree that government has a license to kill with its military, that it may do anything it wishes, pretty much. We have a whole section in U.S. Code called the biological weapons section. If you read that, you can see that government has literally given itself permission to test biological weapons of any sort, including geoengineering, including vaccines of any sort, anything, basically, for research purposes. They can do anything they want at any time to the American people. They are exempt from any law regarding the testing of biological agents. And you know what? All they have to do is put a little notice in the newspaper that they are going to do it, and that's consent. That is informed consent. We have no say over it whatsoever. So everything – why was the Federal Reserve created? We have this fallacy in America and I guess across the world that the Federal Reserve is not government somehow, and I spent months and months researching trying to prove that, and of course came to the conclusion and primarily, you know, sourced that absolutely. I mean, it's a ridiculous concept once you understand that the Federal Reserve, the only reason the Federal Reserve has power is because it's under government. I mean, nothing has power unless it has government's permission. No corporation can be without government incorporating it. I mean, it's really quite simple. And so the concept of the Federal Reserve is this private entity owned by private banks, absolutely ridiculous when you see the evidence that opposes that, and you see that there is no evidence supporting it. And so, I mean, I became an enemy of a lot of people because I came out against Ron Paul and his audit the Fed bill. And I've had numerous people just tear me or try to tear me a new hole, and then later come out and say, "Oh my God, you were right. I actually did the research for myself. I didn't just go to some fictional book that's plagiarized by another fictional book. I actually went to the primary source documents. I read the Federal Reserve Act instead of reading a book about the Federal Reserve Act, and I found out that everything you said was absolutely correct because you're quoting right from the source." Right? So what did the Federal Reserve actually do? Well, at the time, all these banks were creating money and doing all these things, and there was no centralization. In other words, there was no organized crime. The crime was happening independently in these banks. So the purpose of the central bank was to create an organization of that crime. Now banks, in order to participate in this horrible crime, the derivatives market, the toxic asset market, the bond market, all of these things, they have to get permission from government to do an illegal act. They have to get permission from government. They have to join the Federal Reserve Bank. Not only do they have to join it, they have to have a certain amount of money to put up to buy stock. Well, this is not ownership stock. It says right in the Federal Reserve that every bank is required to buy stock. It's not a choice. You and I can't just go buy stock. No corporation can go and buy stock in the Federal Reserve. It doesn't work that way. What they've done is they've created a duality. Congress created a rule, a law, that said the Federal Reserve can act independently of government. Well, guess what? It did the same thing with the Post Office. It did the same thing with the Social Security Administration, the Securities and Exchange Commission, a long list of what are called independent agencies of government. So now Congress said, well, Post Office, you can create your own rules because we don't have time, us 435 congressmen, to possibly run the Post Office, so we're going to create an independent agency to do so. It's still required to follow the law of Congress, but it's allowed to make its own rules. Social Security, we're going to give you the same power. But remember, you're always under government. You cannot break the law, but you're allowed to create rules. Just like in my own home, I'm going to tell my child, hey, listen, you live in my home, this is the rule. Okay, but that under no circumstances can I say, okay, since it's my home, I can break the law. All right, I can molest or rape women in my home because it's my home and I'm allowed to make my own rules. Under no circumstances are you above the law because you can make your own rules. So here's the clincher. What the Federal Reserve has, or the Congress has done, is very clever because it passed a law, a U.S. code, that basically gave the Federal Reserve the power to not talk to Congress in congressional sessions. So the Federal Reserve is now looked at as this rogue agency that doesn't have to speak to Congress, and when Congress asks it a question, you know, the smug leader of the Federal Reserve, can't think of the title, Ben Bernanke,
yeah,
gets up there and pretends like he doesn't have to tell Congress anything. Pretends, because Congress made the rule, that Congress doesn't need to know what the Federal Reserve is doing. And the only reason he does that is because Congress passed a law that says he can. Here's your duality. Here is your enemy. Congress isn't the enemy. The Federal Reserve is somehow independent of government. It's not us that's doing it. It's the Federal Reserve. Oh, it's not us that's breaking the Post Office. It's the Post Office that's doing it. You know, Social Security. Well, we're not doing it. It's the Social Security Administration. All of these things are independent agencies of government. The word of meaning belonging to. So you've created a duality where Congress seems to be this poor little thing that just doesn't have control over its own entities, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard now that I have the disposition of knowledge and of actually doing the primary research. And there I go ranting again. I'm sorry.
Well, no, there's no problem there at all. I mean, we're talking about America, but, you know, is this system replicated around the world? Well, it maybe is replicated in the way that it runs in the same fashion, but how it's organised in the hierarchy appears to be different. Because here in this country, we've got the Bank of England. Now, this is the oldest central bank, the very first central bank, 1694. And this bank, well, to find any information on the Bank of England is almost impossible. I have looked and looked and looked and looked, and all I can find out is that the government actually owns the bank itself. But as for the shareholders and as for the money creation, very, very difficult to understand how that works. I do understand in the past, the governments of the time have had to basically issue paper, and it's a paper-for-paper exchange, and the governments are handing over assets, including us and our future taxes. And it's called Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. That it is, we pay to the Treasury, and the Treasury is in the Bank of England, and that's where the money is. And it has to be loaned back out by the government of the day at interest. And the interest is paid to, then you get stuck on the trail. The trail doesn't go cold, it's just you can't find where it goes next.
Well, and you know, it's kind of similar. You know, I got to the point where there had to be some connection. There had to be something happening that I just couldn't see. And what I ended up doing, and this is, I don't know if this is going to be new news to you or old news, but I went through months and months of just hard research, because that's basically what I do. Uh-huh. And I looked at the genealogy aspect of all of this, and I found out in the process, I found out that George Washington was, of course, a first cousin of the queen,
yep,
the king at the time, and of course the 53 of the 56 signers of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, were of course Master Masons. George Washington, I have a Masonic Bible that I acquired, and of course it lists George Washington as the main Mason, or the Master Mason of America. Hmm. Okay, and then I found out that every single president that we've had in America just happens to be cousins, yep, with George Washington, which, of course, means they're all cousins with the Queen and Kings of England.
Uh-huh.
Well, you say, wait a minute, what about Obama? He's black, right?
Yeah.
No, he's got one little lineage of blackness in his family. But his family, because of that, makes him first cousin.
I'm going to say he's a
first
cousin.
Yeah. Of John Lackland,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yep.
The former, the Plantagenet line of kings. So, I mean, what we have in America, what I found after much, much, much research, is that everything in America, every president, almost every congressman, any governor, anyone of any power, all the actors, every single darn one of them happens to be cousins in this bloodline of the queens and kings of England.
Mm-hmm.
Once I understood that, everything else started making sense. You know, I found that Angelina Jolie, which is basically our royalty here, if you will, is something like the 34th great granddaughter of Cleopatra. Brad Pitt is, you know, ninth cousins of George Bush, and George Bush is, I mean, you just carry all this lineage on, and you see that we are being ruled by this singular family. And the only difference between America and Britain, I think, is that we can't have royalty here, so instead we have what is called celebrity, right? How else do you make a bunch of people wealthy for not doing anything but acting? You know, it's when you realize the ties that bind all these presidents, the vice presidents, all the cabinet members, and you realize that this whole thing is basically based on blood, it changes the whole game, and it really answers a lot of questions.
Mm. Well, we have the same thing here to a point, actually. We have David Cameron and Nick Clegg, and they both, their family lines can be traced back to Russian royalty.
Mm.
So the royals are certainly sticking together on this.
Well, it goes...
I mean, regardless of which country they've actually picked to live in, they're all still connected.
Sure. It's a global society for these folks. And this is what I don't understand. Honestly, maybe you can explain it to me. I don't understand why the people of England would possibly, Britain, whatever you're calling yourselves, but why would you possibly support this whole Queen thing? Why is it that...
I can tell you why. It's because the majority of people think the Queen in this country is good for tourism. Right? She brings in lots of tourists to London, and she allows these little shops to sell plates and cups and whatever, little memories of your trip to London.
Yep.
And they just think it's good for business, and she's worth the £3 or 4 million that we give her so she can pay her slaves and gas bill. Right? That's what the people think. Mm-hmm. They have no idea that she actually lays claim to, not the family. She personally lays claim to 16% of this planet's surface.
The crown, basically.
Yeah. No, here, personally. Her name, personally, is attached to 16% of this planet's surface. I know. It takes to believe it.
Her powers, I can't remember what they're called, but the something powers, her prerogative, basically, is... I mean, she has all the power in the United Kingdom, which of course is the Canada and you know, all these other countries, and that's another thing I don't understand. Why in the heck is Canada allowing the Queen to change their entire? I mean, to basically hire and fire the Prime Minister. What is it that makes the people allow this? I still don't understand. I mean, I understand what you just said, but at some point, doesn't the whole thing become a little ridiculous? I mean.
No, we're a long way.
Like gone. I said, why are we volunteering our subjection to such powers? I don't understand. I mean, I say that, of course, as someone who used to not think this way, of course, and be one of the good little citizens out there. But at the same time, I don't understand. How did this all get into place? I mean, it really boggles my mind where the concept of authority even came from in the first place, especially royal authority.
I think if we could live long enough, I think we'll all actually, the revelation will come to us all, and that is that the royal bloodline has always run this planet for not hundreds but thousands of years, and as the duality becomes singular, the transparency, as they all claim to be offering us now, well, we will be able to see more clearly. And it's going to be obvious to us that the royal bloodline that they claim, and many people agree with, that they have, you know, the Egyptians, they claim to be, you know, they're connected to the Egyptians, the pharaohs. This bloodline goes back as far as documented history goes itself.
Well, and I'll tell you what, I mean, the other aspect of this, it's not just that it's a... It's the bloodline thing, yeah, and if you look at some of these societies, they'll tell you, yeah, not everybody can claim to be in the Plantagenet line. Not everybody can claim to have this royal lineage, and it's very specific. What I also found as I'm doing all this research is that all of the wives, all right? I mean, if you can wrap this around your head, George Bush married Barbara Pierce, of course, we had a president named Pierce, and that makes George Bush Jr. the ninth cousin of his mother, right? And this, I found, all of a sudden, it's so common that I can't find a president that didn't marry his cousin. Not only his cousin, but his first, second, third, very close cousin all throughout history. And what I then started looking at blood and blood type as opposed to just bloodline, I realized that what we're talking about here is the preservation of a certain type of blood, not necessarily the line, because eventually that line can get converted. But I believe that what we're talking about is it's almost like a – like 10 to 15% of the people in the world are of a negative blood type, meaning they don't have a certain type of gene, of protein, called an Rh, it's basically a rhesus monkey gene, basically. Yeah. And as I'm researching this, I'm finding that it extends so greatly outwards into medicine, into pharmacology. I'm finding that certain diseases do not affect Rh negative people, and some do, and so I'm sort of in the process of putting all these pieces together because it's such a vast subject, but at this point I'm pretty convinced that there is something much more devious going on than you can possibly imagine. when it comes to the vaccination process, and I made this, you know, I made a full-length documentary on vaccines and plan to make another one in the future, but I've been studying what are called prions and finding that prions are everything when it comes to disease, and they're literally being delivered through all of these new medications, vaccines, anything that's injected into the blood. It's a very frightening thing. I and I've been trying to connect that with the royal blood, which I'm not positive at this point, but I'm fairly convinced that the reason for all of this inbreeding is not just to keep the line, but to actually keep the blood type. In other words, when a for instance a Rh positive, I can't remember what it is, but if an Rh positive woman is impregnated with an Rh negative male, the positive blood, or vice versa, will actually attack that blood type, that Rh negative blood type, as a foreign enemy. It's not a compatible blood type. So pretty sure that the reason that all this incest was happening, of why the bloodline, was to preserve the blood itself.
I agree with you entirely.
Whereas if you're a negative blood type and you mix with a positive blood type, eventually you're going to see that the type turns positive, and that erases the line. So, I mean, I don't want to get into this too much, but it's so relevant and so and yet so vast and hard to expand on. But I spent so much time researching this, and I'm on the cusp of an understanding of it, and yet not quite there.
Well, I mean, history shows that these people do. I mean, the Galtons, the Darwins, the Wedgwoods, and many more. You know, they only did inbreed, and you know, they found that direct breeding with the brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers was a disaster. But if they spread the net a little wider, that would be true. And I mean, we're born and bred. But we're not pedigree, are we?
No.
We're not pedigree at all, I'm afraid. We're just...
We're definitely mongrel.
We're mongrel. We're mongrels,
aren't we? We're Heinz 57.
But yes, I mean, the breeding program has got to be true. It has to be true because, you know, you look at the dog shows, the Crufts dog shows around the world, and it's all about the breeding programs and how they've been made that way. And I think it'd be a little naive to think that that doesn't apply to us as well.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, you've got these designer drugs coming out, these designer viruses, these designer things, and it turns out that this Rh negative blood, and this doesn't mean that everybody that's Rh negative has anything to do with this. I mean, that's not the point. The point that the scary part of it to me is that the fact that of the absence of that particular Rh factor, which is a protein, it makes certain diseases only applicable to Rh positive people. In other words, it doesn't have the receptor to accept certain diseases, and yet the vice versa is also true. And so I'm finding, as I look at patents, when I do research, I don't read books, I don't read other people's research, I go straight to patents, I go to U.S. Code, I basically haven't read a book in I don't know how long, because I'm only focused on primary source documentation, which is why, you know, if you get into a debate with me, you better be prepared with some serious, you know, backing up the documentation. So, and I try not to delve into anything that I can't literally show you the primary source for. This is a little harder, though, because it's such an abstract thing. But as I pull up all these patents and all these diseases, and I'm now connecting all these dots, and I'm literally of the opinion that basically all modern disease nowadays is being caused by injecting foreign proteins, in other words, animal or other human proteins, into people's bodies. Mm-hmm. And those are infectious, what are called infectious prions, and it's causing everything from AIDS to autism to all the genetic, what we think is genetic diseases, which are actually, similar to mad cow disease. It's a transmissible encephalopathy, and that's causing Alzheimer's, ALS, all of the dementia-related diseases, where if you ask a doctor, they have absolutely no clue what causes these dementia, and now, of course, early-onset Alzheimer's and dementia. Well, guess what? It's because we're taking a vaccine or some other medication that is blood-based, in other words, injectable. We're growing it on animal cells, like the blood of bovine serum or bovine, you know, parts, any kind of animal, and we're also growing it on aborted human fetuses.
Yeah, I know this. I've read about this. Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, what we're talking about is we've become cannibals when it comes to medicine, and we're growing these cell substrates on these. On these proteins from animals and humans, and then injecting them right into us. Well, that, I mean, it says right in every insert for every vaccine, for every injectable medication, that literally this may cause the symptoms of what's called transmissible encephalopathy, spongiform encephalopathy. When you do these autopsies on these people who are suffering these great dementia diseases, their brains have holes in them from spongiform encephalopathy, just like mad cow disease. And now, as I'm researching even further, I'm finding that these patents are not to stop these prions from mutating and causing other proteins to basically destroy themselves. They're to promote them. They're to create altered and genetically altered forms of them that can be patented as unique life, even though they're not alive. And I mean, it's the things that are happening behind the scenes that it takes a specific search item to even find. In other words, no one would find anything on prions. Maybe if you're searching for zombies, you might find some obscure reference. But unless you know what you're looking for, and specifically state in your search engine that you're looking for this and that it's fact, it exists, I know it exists, I'm not asking if it exists, I'm finding that most of the modern disease that's being caused is being caused by this one thing. And the management of that and the creation of that is being implemented on a scale that I find hard to believe. And it's all happening behind the scenes. No doctor knows about it. Ask a doctor what a prion is. They'll probably tell you they have no idea, even though it's seems to be the cause of most modern disease. So, again, I don't want to get off on a tangent like this, but, I mean, I really, really feel that this is part of the enslavement, because it's a huge, huge, huge multi-trillion-dollar profitable industry to make people sick and then offer to, you know, cure their symptoms but not their disease, because you're creating the disease. And that, I think, is perhaps the most dire reason why we need to wake the heck up and stop letting, for instance, government regulate what is medicine, what is healing, why is it illegal for me to scientifically heal somebody and go to jail for it. Well, it's because government is the main investor in all these pharmaceutical corporations, both national and international. So when you look at the main stockholder, it's government. Who's getting the dividends? Government. Who's making the laws that allow corporations to do what they do without getting in trouble? Government. Because, again, government is organized crime.
It is.
It's all corporations, isn't it, really? I mean, we say corporations, but actually it is cooperations, isn't it?
Cooperation, yeah.
We're taught to believe that the government is there, and they call themselves servants, and are there to act in our interests. And, of course, nothing could be further from the truth once you look a little closer. It doesn't take a lot of studying to work that out. But the governments have the ability to control our lives, and the corporations have the ability to bribe governments to control our lives in a way that is beneficial for government. And you know, that's we've got to start thinking that that is what's been going on for an awful long time. It's not new. The only thing new to this game is the people who find it.
Yeah.
The game has been running for
a long time. Yeah.
And it's not a pleasant place to be. You know, it's
not unfortunate.
Waking
is it?
Up, as they call it, the nine levels of waking up. It's, you know, the more you become self-actualized, self-aware, the less appealing, the less appealing life is itself. I mean, there's no entertainment. There's no there's nothing that appeals to you anymore in on the side of the artificial construct. Even what we are doing now, this interview that we're doing, I sometimes wonder why I'm doing it, because I don't want to say it's falling on deaf ears, but the process to get you know, ahead in this process of waking up requires so much time and so much effort and so many dots that you have to connect over many, many years that, you know, I know that people don't have the time to do that. And I like to say that, you know, on my blog, I try to speak in the most basic, take the difficult concepts and transform them into, you know, everyday language. But it's very difficult when you have a belief system that's based on basically government propaganda, movies, television, all of these things. Again, history being rewritten as we speak. As it happens, it's being rewritten. So, you know, I'm both frustrated at the concept of being an individual, and yet I realize that the sole power that I have is to recognize myself as an individual, and I don't mean the legal term individual. I mean I'm a man and nothing else. If I want to be truly free, and I guess that's something we gotta talk about freedom. If I want to be truly free, a free man, then I have to always be alive.
Correct.
I can never, ever suffer the presumed, you know, opinion of government that I am an artificial person. I must never show to government that I am an artificial construct, that a contractual person, because then government has no power. Because government only has power over non-living things.
Well, the thing that we have to, we have to grow up, don't we? That's the first thing. We do have to accept that we don't know much. We have to accept that at one point we didn't know. And you talked about freedom and waking up. And I think for me, as my journey moves along, I mean, what you were saying there about why am I doing this? What can I really achieve? We have this every Tuesday night.
We do, yeah.
Every Tuesday.
I was just going to say that every Tuesday.
We've got to try and do something. Mm. And we have to try We have to try and be attractive in a way that, you see, the shows that we do, they're not comedy shows, and we don't make people laugh, but we try and get people to at least sort of go, that sounds interesting.
Mm.
You know, we play with the words all the time. You use the word contract. To me, when you use the word contract, I hear the word make smaller.
And that's, I'm sorry, the word what?
Make smaller.
Contract.
You see, and by contracting us, we act against ourselves. In other words, we act contra to our best interests. But we're not smart enough to realise we're doing that. And the education that they give us, you talked about a primary source. Well, we go to primary schools in this country. And those primary schools teach us to read and write and get a good grasp of mathematics, or at least they used to. But then we go on to a secondary education. And when you look at that properly, you've got what you need. The rest, the secondary stuff, is perhaps what you didn't need anyway. Because it's a second-rate education. Rate, unless you want to go and pay thousands of pounds for what might be a first-rate education. So all these words mean different things to me when you talk. But let's get on to freedom, and how on earth do we describe...
Well, okay, so... again, one of the most pivotal moments in my life was when I really started digging into the legal dictionaries, because once you realize that government is on a completely different language than you are in your everyday life, you have to understand, you know, if I'm going to say, well, I have freedom because of the Constitution, well, what does that mean? First of all, the Constitution is nothing but a debt compact. In other words, if you're a constitutor, you are a debtor. So all of these things in the Constitution are legal terms. And a lot of them have an opposite meaning of what we've all grown up to think. But the one that really got me was the word freedom. Because when you say the word free and you say the word freedom, it turns out that these two words are the absolute opposite of each other. So if you look in any legal dictionary, I always start with Bouvier's 1856, because that's the closest. It was actually accepted as part of the Constitution, part of the Supreme Court, part of Congress, and actually commissioned by Congress. Because it, to me, it's a very honest dictionary. It includes the eugenics opinions of the time. It includes the real structure of thought that was happening at the time that the Constitution was signed. And that's why I like to go to it as opposed to any other dictionary first and then go from there. Well, if we actually go and we read what the definition of freedom is, it states liberty. Well, okay, but liberty is also a legal term, not just a conversational term. But here's what it actually is. See, freedom. Freedom, we're talking about not being free, but freedom. You see, freedom, it states, is the right to do what is not forbidden by law. Freedom does not preclude the idea of subjection to law. Indeed, it presupposes the existence of some legislative provision, the observance of which ensures freedom to us by securing the like observance from others. In other words, it forces the observance of freedom from others. Well, wait a minute. We've always thought that freedom meant being free. You know, we live in a free country. Well, actually, no. There's no such thing as a free country, because a country is a political term. Free and country don't belong in the same sentence. Okay, so if I'm free to do what I want, that means that there is no law, there is no government, there is nothing that can tell me except God and my personal world view, my natural law, basically, as I see it. There's nothing that can tell me that I can't walk my dog without a leash or do you know, all these things. But if I have freedom, I have a contractual or political right, whereas being free is my natural right. Freedom is my political right. Freedom is granted by government, whereas being free, for lack of a better way of putting it, is granted by God, whatever that means to you, if it's nature, if it's natural law, whatever.
You're spot on.
So the difference between these two words, in my opinion, is the basis of all misunderstanding in the population, no matter where you live. Because if you have freedom, you are not free in any way. Because remember, the definition of legal definition, which is what is in the Constitution, freedom of speech, for instance. What if I were free to speak, there's nothing. But if I have freedom of speech, I only have what I can do is I can talk and I can say things that are not forbidden by law. So freedom is literally to obey the law.
Yep.
Freedom means to obey government law. I can say that over and over and over. Unless you understand these terms, these legal terms as they are applied in the legal documents, like the Constitution, like the Bill of Rights, like the Magna Charta, you will never understand what is happening to you. When you say that you have freedom in America, all that means is that you must obey the laws of the American government. It means you have no state of being free unless you obey the law. Well, what happens then when the law becomes lawless, when everything is illegal, when everything is basically forbidden by law, when freedom itself or being free itself is forbidden by law? Well, then there is no such thing as being free. And that's the point where you have to realize, well, the only way to be free is to separate your contractual, voluntary relationship with the thing that gives you freedom. Am I making sense here?
You are, yeah. I'm actually looking through Black's Law Dictionary while you're talking, actually just picking out a few descriptions that are in here. And you're absolutely right. The word free and the word freedom is a political they're both listed as a possible political right.
Yeah. And again, a political right is what's called a positive right. Anything that is positive is forced upon you. Anything that is negative is your natural right. Now, the technically, if you have a natural right, there is never any positive right that can ever harm your natural right. So your natural right is to basically to not have something forced upon you. If you come and say you want to buy my home and I say no, it is your natural duty to go the heck away and leave me alone and not try to steal my property, right? That is natural law. That is what a natural right is. Everything else, anything that is a government or political right that is granted, including freedom, is in the positive realm, which means the opposite of natural. So a positive right means that you have the right to have things forced upon you because you agree to it. So the difference between a natural right and a positive right, and the difference between being free and freedom, are the two most important subjects that anyone could be talking about right now, because they are so vastly opposed to each other. A natural right and a political right are literally magnetically opposed to each other. And freedom and being free are magnetically opposed to each other. Boy, you try to tell this to the average person, they will look at you like you're crazy, which is why I say I feel frustrated trying to get this across to people. But
we've had plenty of that over the years. I can tell you, people looking at us like we're nuts. I mean, this journey starts with as many mistakes as you can possibly make as quickly as possible, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, sure. the stuff sure. we did in the
I
way.
Mean, you're you're certainly not free when you're born. You're completely dependent on your mother, and then you, as you stated so eloquently in the beginning of the show, you hand over your when you finally can take care of yourself, you hand over everything to government, who then becomes I can't remember the Latin term, but I mean basically your parents are, everybody signs over their children to government, just like they sign over their car and their home.
We never actually checked.
I want to now that we have that defined, this is I got to read you this because this is my favorite U.S. code. Of all the things that are ridiculous, unimaginable things that are in U.S. code, you have to just write this down and read it over and over and over until it sinks in. Okay. Knowing the difference between a natural and a political right, anything in U.S. code is positive law. It's not negative. In other words, it is the right to have things forced upon you. So anything that government says is law means that you have a right to have it forced upon you, a political right, whereas your natural right is to not have anything forced upon you. So listen to this. Write this down. Put it on a T-shirt. Spread it all over the world, because I'm sure it's the same in every – I mean it's the same concept, mm-hmm. the same entomology or whatever it's called, the study of words. I mean it's basically the same thing,
same
the difference between natural rights. This is called the Statement of Equal Rights. Okay, it is 42 U.S. Code. So U.S. Code 42, Section 1981. As far as I'm concerned, it should say 1984. But this is U.S. Code 42, Section 1981. Equal rights under the law. Oh, well, I mean, right there, we can tear that apart. There's no such thing as equal rights. That doesn't exist except in a political realm. What that means is that you're taking everybody and you're giving them equal status. Okay? Status is not natural. Okay? Now women are equal to men. Everybody's equal. No one is special. Everybody's equal. And therefore, government draws from the pool of equal people all of their consent at once, which is why the individual is so darn important. So, okay, so here's what it says. 42 U.S. Code, Section 1981, Equal Rights Under the Law. Section A is all you have to read. Statement of Equal Rights. Now, it starts off sounding wonderful. It says all persons, meaning artificial persons, within the jurisdiction of the United States shall have the same right in every state and territory to make and enforce contracts, very important, to sue, be parties, give evidence, and to the full and equal benefit of all laws and proceedings for the security of persons and property as is enjoyed by white citizens. Well, I mean, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? But then it says this, and all persons shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind, and to no other. I'm going to read that to you again. All persons in the jurisdiction of the United States have the right, the political right, to be subject to punishment, pain, penalty, tax, license, and exaction of every kind, and to no other. Okay? Now, perhaps, you understand the difference between a natural right, which is the right to not have punishment, pain, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind forced on you, and your contractual or legal right, your political or positive law right, which is to have punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions forced upon you. That is your right. And so, again, we have to you have to distinguish between what a right is in your natural realm and your political realm, because everybody confuses the word right and confuses the word freedom to mean something other than what it actually does. And so you cannot defend yourself if you don't know what a right is. If you don't know that it is your right to be put in prison, how can you defend or say that that is not my right? I do not consent to that right, right? I mean, if you're signing a unilateral agreement that says, yes, absolutely, I love U.S. code, and therefore I love the fact that government wants to put, you know, can at any time tell me that I can go to prison, be put in pain, taxed, licensed. Most important word here is the word exaction. So go to your Black's Law or go to your Bouvier's Law Dictionary and look up the word exaction. What is exaction? It's extortion, literally translated to extortion. It has a very, very small difference. But basically, when you look up the word exaction, you will find that it's defined as extortion. So you have the right, you see, the positive political government-granted right to have the freedom to obey the law of the police officer who gives you a citation and exacts money from you. Yep. This is why
I've got
this one U.S. code, again, is perhaps the most telling, the most indicative thing I've ever seen of how enslaved we are to our own ignorance.
Yep, I've just found exaction, and it's exactly what you said. It's demanding, it's basically demanding money. And more than is. I'll read it exactly. Actually, let's have a look. I'm saying exactly now. That's another word that I don't want to use now. Let's have a look. Exaction. The Black's Law Dictionary, 9th edition. The actual is the act of demanding more money than is due. Extortion. Number two, a fee, reward, or other compensation arbitrarily or wrongfully demanded.
Marvelous. So it is your right to have money demanded from you wrongfully and against the law, basically. I mean, that's what it says. That's your right. And boy, if people just... It took me years and years to fully understand this concept of what the legal and natural, you know, everything has a natural and a fake or artificial meaning. And boy, once you start really looking up all these words, you look up the word constitution, you look up the word freedom, you look up, everything is such an illusion. It is such a lie. You go to these rallies and they talk about freedom and you realize that they have no idea what they're saying and that they truly believe that the word freedom means to be free, and they don't know that their freedom actually requires them to obey the law that allows them, gives them the right to be punished, pain. You know, you start realizing this, and you withdraw from society. You don't want to have any part of the matrix. You don't have any contractual obligations to have any rights given to you or forced upon you in the positive or political realm. And that's, I guess, when you're talking about withdrawing from all of this, that's where I'm at right now, because now I can see for the first time in my life that everything that's been put forward to me and sold to me from birth through the public education system that equals freedom has been a complete and utter lie.
Yeah.
And now I can actually say, look, I can prove it. Before, I knew it was true. Most people know that something's wrong, but can't actually point to the place that says that it's wrong. Here I am, and I can point to it. I can show you, right in U.S. Code, Section 1981, Chapter 42, what freedom is, what your rights are, and they are not even close to what you thought they were. Well, I mean, it's ridiculous in the whole context of it. When you see it for the first time, it really is that allegory of waking up from the Matrix. Boy, is it a shocker to the system.
Well, it is, because the funeral, the wake-up is your own funeral, isn't it? Because you realize you've been living a life of death.
It literally is. And if you look up the word death, you'll find that there's two different kinds of death.
Uh-huh.
There's a natural death, and there's a civil death. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make myself civilly dead, because I don't want civil rights. What are civil rights? Equal rights. What are equal rights? We just read the Statement of Equal Rights. Why would I want a civil right that makes me equal with everyone else, so that I can be punished and put in pain like everyone else? I don't want it. I'm going to become civilly dead. I will not have a corporation or an artificial person, a straw man, whatever you want to call it. I will not have contracts that state that I'm forced to do something against my natural right. So, I mean, this is the Matrix. And this is escaping the Matrix. Realizing what the Matrix is the hardest part. Now that you know, the trick is getting out of it. And that is where the unilateral contracts and stepping out and saying, I'm no longer part of this, putting yourself in danger. That's the part, I think, where most people say, well, you know, I'm getting my Social Security benefits when I'm 65 if I live that long. And if Social Security lives that long, I'm getting public, you know, benefits that basically allow me to subsist in a way that's really not worth it, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's easier than, you know, walking the walk and actually being a free man. I'd rather have freedom than being a free man. I'd rather be a slave than being free. That's it.
Okay, we've got a few minutes left because we haven't got a time slot booked on Block Talk. We've got a few minutes left to go. Now, can I ask you to perhaps, let's look a year or two or three or five or ten in the future. And I think quietly, us here in the UK are hoping that the news, and as it's pouring over here from America, is going to wake up a lot of people in the UK, because we really are a very sleepy nation compared to the numbers that, you know, perhaps you're picking up in America. I mean, am I right in thinking that America is starting to stand up on its own two feet and consider a fight back?
Well, you know, I hate to say that, because, again, most of the people that are standing up are only doing it, again, in the social media realm. They're me and a few partners. I mean, again, I don't have a business. I'm not doing this for money. I'm not. You noticed I haven't tried to sell you anything. I mean, I don't have any wares. I don't have any. I'm not going to scare you into buying my product because you're going to have to. You won't be able to survive without it. I have nothing to sell. The only thing I'm trying to do is not be alone in this. To have a educated citizenry. Well, that's probably the wrong word. And educated people who are not afraid anymore, because they realize there's nothing to be afraid of. There's no power without consent. So I think there's a lot of people, and I certainly wouldn't lay claim to the reason for that this being so, but I think there's a lot of people that are starting to wake up, as you say, but not in the way...
It takes a long time,
that inspires confidence in those people. In other words,
you got to go through the crazy
people,
year or
people
two,
want
haven't you?
To make a change. They want to act, but they just don't know how. Mm-hmm. And again, it takes forever to figure out actually how. And I only have my two hands and my one mouth, and I'm trying my hardest to really put this stuff out there. But you can only reach so many people at a time, and most people are not interested. And this is why I say, yes, there's a group think that's starting to happen, but that might be the most dangerous thing. You know, you might have a bunch of people who are following Alex Jones, for instance, but Alex Jones isn't revealing the solutions to these problems. He's only telling you about the problems, which is my problem with the guy, because a lot of people out there are selling products by shocking you into the realization that you're a slave. They're not telling you how to get out of it. They're not telling you to organize and do something about it, because that would be against the profit model of Shock Jock Radio, right? You notice I'm not doing that. I'm actually trying to tell you to be a man, whether you're a female man or a male man. If you're going to be free and you're a female, you're going to have to realize that you're a man. Just like a female horse is a horse, a man is mankind. Okay? The word man, the word woman does is create an equal rights status, a civil status. So the word woman, if you claim to be a woman, you're actually accepting basically the mark of the beast. So there's a few women out there that have really come forward and said, forget this feminist crap. You're a man. You know, you can be feminist all you want, but realize that under the law, under the natural law, you are of a species. That species is man. And the only thing you're going to get by claiming to be a woman is civil rights. In other words, equal rights, which is punishment, pain, penalties, taxes, licenses, exactions.
Hang on. Let's go back to the question was that in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time, I mean, is America waking up in the way that America is going to stand up and put up a jolly good resistance to this? Or are we perhaps just...
I mean, the only answer I can give you is I hope that that's the case. I mean, I hope there's some form of organization. But, I mean, what I promote is that you better not do it as a people per se, that you have to get people to resist individually. You cannot, as we stated before, you cannot rely on heroes. There's no Batman or Superman that's going to save you. You're going to have to save yourself. So if America is going to do anything, what we've found by studying history, real history, is that every revolution that's ever happened in the world has been a controlled revolution. Okay, the hippie movement didn't start because a bunch of people got together and said, let's make some music and smoke some pot. No, most of the people in the Laurel Canyon movement, they were daughters and sons of high military generals and admirals. Okay, this was a very planned event. The introduction of drugs, the introduction of mushrooms, was a very planned thing. All revolutions, you see, when they're in the group mode, are planned events. So if America's ever going to wake up, they're going to have to do so on an individual basis, and they're going to not, you know, they're going to have to withdraw basically their consent and their support for this central government that's doing all this crime.
Well, they're going to have to support
their state, support their local people. That's the only answer I can give you.
Yep.
Otherwise, there's no point in having an organization, because government's always going to be a bigger organization. And any revolution that happens is going to be guided and planned, and it's never going to change anything. It'll change the symbology of it, but it'll never actually change anything. You'll still be a slave with equal rights, basically.
Okay, well, what I was going to say was that this revolution that everybody talks about, everyone's got a different picture of what revolution is, but the majority of people think it is wandering down the road with your placards, with your political statements on there, shouting and bawling to try and change the world. That's not the world that you live in, really. The revolution that you're looking for is inside your own head.
Exactly.
Because that's the revolution, that's the circle that you keep going round in, but every time you go round, the view gets deeper, your understanding, your depth improves. People think, I mean, if you've got a drill and you start boring, you get deeper. We think the word boring is of no interest to us, yet every time we go around a revolution, we learn more and getting deeper, don't we?
We do, yeah.
And,
hey, I got one more legal definition for everyone to look at. It's another one of my favorites, and that is the word solution. Oh, what does the word solution mean in legal terms? Well, in legal terms, the word solution means to end contract. So we're all going around saying, well, what's the solution? Wait, give us the solution. Don't just tell us the problem. What's the solution? And in every case, every single case, the solution in the proper form, the proper legal form, is to end contract. To end presumed consent, the contract, the unilateral agreement that you agree that government has power because of your presumed consent. That is the definition of solution. It's the only definition that matters. Any conversational definition means nothing. So, I mean, I got to add that in, because literally if you're looking for a solution, there is only one, and that's the legal solution, which is to end your support and contract with government. That's it.
Well, you're absolutely, I mean, I agree. That's what we say every week, that if we don't actually get into these council meetings, if we don't get in to find out what's going on there, learn the system, then learn the system in a way that we can use it to actually, never mind defend ourselves, we need to start attacking. These people are attacking us every day. I mean, we pay our taxes day after day after day. These people know what they're doing. This is a war construct that we've been living in our entire lives, and we don't recognise it because we think it's normal. This is completely normal to 99% of the people. I mean, half the people, I think, actually do know how this system works and are happily benefiting from it. And the other half haven't a bloody clue how it works and pay all the bills.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you know, people have been basically averred avoidance of actual, like, getting violent, right? The word violent to me means you're going to sue, all right? You're gonna put a claim in that says, hey, This government official has done something illegal, and you can't be afraid to do that. You cannot be afraid to use the courts, because there's this little court that's virtually unknown to most people, called the Court of Record, and this is in the United States, that doesn't get used unless you specifically use it. But it is the highest court in the land in America, the Court of Record. Okay, we all go into the Court of Equity, which is this private, you know, half the time the justice centers, which have nothing to do with law, they're all administrative law. We want to avoid that. We want to start suing. You don't sue for money, okay? You sue for all kinds of reasons. You don't have to sue for money. What we've been taught in the media is that everybody's sue crazy. They're trying to sue for $1 million because McDonald's spilled hot coffee on me. That is not the purpose of the court. The purpose of the court is to express violence. In other words, to express, without getting violent, literally, to express your distaste, to actually make a change in what's happening, to create new law through the grand juries, to actually utilize the courts. But you cannot be afraid of the court. You just have to utilize it in the proper form, which of course is the hidden form, the stuff you might not be able to even read about. You have to learn this stuff. So we have to not be afraid to sue. And guess what? It doesn't cost you anything. You don't need a lawyer. You don't need to be, another thing I don't tell people is, do not act pro se, because that means you're acting in an artificial capacity representing yourself. No, you're just yourself. You're a man. You never enter into an artificial capacity. You stay a man by entering into the court of record. You never allow it to be administrative, because the only thing government or courts can administrate is artificiality. So you stay in the court, the proper court. All your documents should be filed by the court clerk, which is a different position than the clerk of the court. There, I mean, there's so many variances that have been set up to confuse people. When you walk into a court, the person you're talking to, that's the clerk, is not the person you should be talking to, because that's just administrative. That has nothing to do with what you want to do. Do not be afraid to utilize the courts, but avoid trying to make a, you know, courts are... It's not a for-profit model. It is for lawyers. But you don't want to be an attorney. You don't want to be a lawyer. They're the dreg of society, basically. You want to act lawfully in the lawful court. So, I mean, that is, unfortunately, that is one of the things that's going to have to happen. People are going to have to start demanding things, not asking, not getting on their social media sites and saying, gee, I wish government would do this. Oh, please, 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 government, stop harming me. Stop extorting from me. Well, they're not going to do that. It's the law that they can.
Well, the thing about this abusive relationship,
you have to do so by suing.
Let me get in.
Suing
let
is
me
not
get
a
in.
Bad word.
Clint, let me get in. Okay, the thing about this abusive relationship that we're living in is that if we let this abuse continue, it's going to end like all abusive relationships. It's going to get worse and worse and worse, and if we stay long enough, they're going to kill us. So we're going to have to stand up eventually, grow up, and fight back using the methods that they've used to enslave us with. That's for sure.
Yeah, they're killing us slowly. I mean,
I know.
Sit back and take it, or do something about it.
Mr. Clint Richardson,
I should mention too. I traveled the other day I went through the airport and I set up basically a case because I informed the TSA here that they could not touch me and that I didn't consent to any other screening process. And they basically molested me against my consent. And so I'm going to sue. I'm going to become the poster child of what I'm saying. In other words, I'm going to walk the walk, and I'm going to sue these people. Not only am I going to sue the TSA and the airport police, but I'm going to sue those people acting under the color of law of the TSA and the airport police. I'm going to sue them personally for their property as remedy for what they did to me, which, again, was to molest me, to touch my private parts against my consent. All right, so I'm not going to just talk about this. I'm going to actually walk the walk. You see what I'm saying? So I'm going to sue. I'm going to get it in court. I'm going to actually try to change the law to where they have to tell people that all of this is voluntary and requires consent. So, I mean, I'm going to take action as an individual to try to help the group. That is what people need to do. Always act individually, never as part of a group. It's okay to be organized with a group, but you always stay individual. And everything you do should be designed to help everybody, not just yourself.
Well,
that's a tough thing to get people to do.
Fill it all,
especially if there's no profit involved. Oh, and I wanted to say, in America anyway, the court cannot charge you. This is the beauty of the lawful court that still exists but is basically ignored. The court has no lawful authority to charge you to submit a case. In fact, it cannot. If it does so, it is breaking its own law. It does not cost you anything to sue. And I wanted to get that across. Unless you're going to hire a lawyer and you're going to enter into the administrative court, you do not have to pay anything to use the court. It is your right, both politically and naturally.
Mr. Clint Richardson, thank you very much for your time. We've certainly ran over a little bit longer than our normal interviews, but we're quite happy to do that because the information has been very different to what I expected.
It was a pleasure, man. Usually you're more funny because you don't have someone like me taking up the time.
But the little bit that I understood what you were going to go with, and then you actually went with the Federal Reserve, and you really have tipped a little bit, or tipped a lot of the things that everyone thinks is so because somebody else said it was.
There's a lot of fallacy. The whole
you challenged that, yes, you have challenged
freedom
that.
Freedom movement. I mean, think about it. What do we call it? What do we call it here in America anyway? We call it the freedom movement. Well, we just defined what freedom is. Why would you want to be a part of a freedom movement?
Well, this is the information. Nobody can know everything. You know, we can't laugh at people for not knowing, but we can appreciate that they're trying. I mean,
well, I can laugh because I mean I was there. I was part of that. I was as dumb or as smart as anyone else out there. You know, so I can look back at my life and my experience, my travel, my journey, and I can laugh at myself. And if you can't do that, then you're never going to get ahead.
It takes a long time to get to the position that you're in, and I recognise and certainly resonate with a lot of what you're doing. I thoroughly enjoyed reading your website, where your blog spot today more than anything else. I've enjoyed going through quite a lot of that. All the details, this is actually going to be on YouTube tomorrow, so all the connections to you and to us will be actually below the video that people are watching on YouTube. And realityblogger.wordpress.com, but just one G in blogger, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, not the best website, but gosh, I've had it for so many years, I never thought it would get to the point where it is, so...
Well, you're doing something which is more than most people are doing, and we're all trying. If we all do something, something will change eventually. We all have our own ways. The ways to win are whatever you're prepared to do, isn't it? Some people just want to read. Some people just want to talk. But yourself and myself and Andy and a few people that we know, we're getting frustrated with the fact that we want to get things going, changing, doing. You know, really trying to get in there, and you know you're going to get hurt along the way. You know you're going to lose along the way, but losing's all a part of learning how to win.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like I said, I got molested, and I had a police officer grab my arm and put it behind my back and push up and basically make my arm hurt for about a week without ever saying I was under arrest or anything else. So, I mean, you're going to have to face a little danger if you want to be free. I mean, it's basic life 101, right there.
No 2 days are the same, are there? Some days you think, oh, my God. And other days you think, no, I wouldn't go back. I can't go back. And do you know what? Knowing this stuff, yeah, I got this far because I wanted to know. And now I know.
now I've got to do something with it. So, I enjoy it in a macabre sort of way. I wish it wasn't this way, but it is this way, yeah.
But remember now, this goes back to duty. You know, you have a right, and the opposite of a right is a duty. So you can't just sit on this. It's your natural duty to try and you know, help others to be free.
That's what we're doing.
And the difference between a natural duty and a political duty is that, you know, your contract says you have to do something that you might not want to do. So, you know, again, you're talking about when you say, what you're saying basically is that you have a duty, a natural duty, to try and change what's happening around you. You can't sit and watch children being molested and raped. You cannot sit and watch government put people in jail for no reason whatsoever. You cannot do that. You have a duty to other people and yourself to help them. And that's what it boils down to. It's your natural state of being. And the more you realize that, and again, the more you become a man, the less you will ignore what's happening around you.
We asked for it, and we've been given it. You know, we've been given the gift of the present, and here it is. And we're going to unwrap it and deal with what's inside every day. I love it. I actually love it in a macabre way. Would I rather be doing something else? Of course I would. I'd love to be sat with my feet up. But I can't. You can't. Andy can't. We can't. We'll do what we can and see where it takes us. Mr. Richardson, thank you for your company this evening. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Andy.
Cheers. All right.
Cheers.
I'll speak to you after we finish the show off, and I'll send you a copy of the MP3 if you want it.
Sure.
All right. Catch you later. One of our longest interviews.
That was.
A gentleman who had a lot to say.
He did, a lot to
and
share.
And I was quite surprised at the Federal Reserve and how it's, as usual, once you think you've got the hang of it, it just gets worse, doesn't it? It just gets worse. You think, I've got it. And then it bloody changes again, doesn't it?
Yeah. While he was talking through it, I always like to make a few notes. And at the very end there, I wrote down time and money. And that's where they've got us. We haven't got the time to sit down and research all. Obviously, Clint has there. He's had time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to ask him for some reason or other. I don't know why I got ask him. But I didn't get a chance to ask him what he does during the day and how he did find time to go through all this with a fine-tooth comb by the sound of it.
Well, the American system, the American legal system is being challenged very, very well. I mean, we get lots of forums and lots of stuff about the Americans really are challenging their system.
They're a bit more rigorous about it than we are.
I think it's maybe because they still have a modicum of what freedom means to them.
Mm.
I think we perhaps lost touch with freedom a little earlier than they have.
Yeah, longer.
We've no guns, we've got knives, no baseball bats. We've got no instinct to want to have a method of defending ourselves.
No, we've lost the ability to say no, haven't we?
The criminals have got the guns. Yeah. The government's got the bloody gun. In fact, everyone, they've all got the arms to attack us, but all means of defending ourselves has been removed.
It's been removed.
And we don't feel uncomfortable with that.
No.
Anyway, the end of the show.
It is. Again,
another
one.
Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
Do we have a guest next week? We may well have.
Right.
We may well have a guest. We'll know when we get there, won't we?
We will.
All right, my Facebook, your Facebook, everything that Mr. Clint Richardson has got online will stick also.
Thanks to Phil.
And
thanks to Nick in Cornwall, left another nice little comment from last week's show.
He's a top fella.
Yes.
All right, till next week.